Hello and welcome to A Wish Come Clear's You Need to Read video series. Today I'm thrilled to be here with Laura Vanderkam. She is the author of several amazing books on time management and productivity, including most recently, I Know How She Does It, How Successful Women Make the Most of Their Time. We're going to give away a copy of that book to one lucky commenter, so be sure to leave a comment and enter to win. Laura is also a speaker. She delivered a wonderful talk at TED Women last year. She questions the status quo and she helps her readers to rediscover their true passions and beliefs in pursuit of more meaningful lives at lauravanderkam.com. She does all this with four kids, a husband, and a consistent exercise routine. So welcome, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
You're so welcome. And thank you for bearing with us. We had some technical glitches before we started the recording, but you were grace under pressure. So
technology always is just making our lives easier, right?
Exactly. Well, to start off and to help our listeners just to get to know you a little bit, can you talk a bit about how your interest in time management really began, if there was a particular catalyst that led you to focus in this area?
You know, there wasn't one in particular. I realized that I've long been interested in people's schedules. I'm always curious where the time really goes, because it turns out that we all have the exact same amount of time. I mean, everyone has the same 24 hours in a day, 168 hours in a week. And so over the years, I've met these people who have amazing careers. I've been a journalist for years, so I got to interview lots of wonderful people. And they'd have these amazing careers, but then they'd also have amazing personal lives too. And they're like, well, how are they making this all fit together? And it's not that they have any more time than anyone else. It must be that they are allocating their time, their hours in interesting ways that perhaps the rest of us can learn from. So I studied that and I became fascinated by the topic of time itself, just because I think that the conventional wisdom about how we spend our time tends to be wrong. Like, we have many false stories about how we spend our time, and I think that that's worth examining if we want to have a better picture of our lives.
Absolutely. I love that. When you examine those false stories, a whole new world really opens up to you. So much of your writing emphasizes the importance of really tracking your time, because often it's easy to fool yourself with that story and think that you know where it's going when maybe you don't have the data to back that up. So I've done this, I found it very helpful, but before I share any of that from my experience, I want to address some of the common objections to time tracking, because I know many people listening here might think, tracking your time, that is so cumbersome, that's so hard, I don't have time to track my time. So why would they make the effort? And in your own words, why is it worth it?
Yeah, I mean, at first, it's not nearly as onerous as people might think. I mean, I track my time and have done so continuously for about 2 years now. You don't have to do that, trust me. You don't have to. But I just use a spreadsheet. It's Excel, nothing crazy. Like, if you ever had to like take a spreadsheet class or do this for work, you can do it. It's got half hours along the left side, days of the week along the top, 5 a.m. to 5 a.m. every day. I'm totally cool with putting things just like work, sleep, you know, shower, hang out with kids. It does not have to be, you know, minute-by-minute details, just broadly what I did with that half hour. It doesn't have to be perfect. The idea is more just sort of the comprehensive sense of where the time goes. The reason to do this is that we often have stories about where our time goes that are informed by many things. There's many things the human brain does. We tend to remember bad things more than good things, but good things happen too. So keeping track of where the time goes reminds us that good things happen. Mm-hmm. We have a tendency to remember certain things as typical when they may not be typical. We discount deviations from the norm because we don't realize how often those deviations occur. So just one example, people tend to overestimate work hours. And one of the reasons they do that is that they think, well, one night this week I stayed till, you know, 8 o'clock at night, I was there 12 hours. Well, 12 times five is 60. And let's say it seemed like I was on email over the weekend, so I was probably on for 5 hours. So that's 65 hours. And I say, okay, I work 65 hours a week. But they weren't there every day for 12 hours. Like Friday, they were definitely not there for 12 hours. And like, you know, another day they came in a little later and there's a longer lunch someday. And so when you add up all those deviations from the norm, you wind up with a much lower number because it's not the way we wish to see ourselves. We're like, oh, I feel overworked, and so therefore I'm going to look at the longest day as typical. You know, we underestimate leisure time just because nobody ever has enough. It seems like, I mean, unless you're retired or something, you probably don't feel like you have quite enough leisure time. And so it's, the tendency is to feel like it never happens, whereas the more accurate assessment is usually that it happens, just not as much as you want. But that's a different matter, and that's a different thing to deal with than it never happening. So it's important to keep track of the time just so you know for sure where the time goes, because then you can decide to make certain changes to spend it differently, or hey, maybe everything's great, which is also wonderful as well. But then you know you're making the right changes, right? Like, I mean, you could. It's like keeping a food journal if you're trying to lose weight, and you're like, I don't understand why I'm not losing weight. My meals are awesome. I'm eating exactly what I'm supposed to eat. It's like, oh yeah, well there is also those half dozen chocolate chip cookies you're eating in the afternoon. Like if you don't change that, you're not going to lose weight, but you probably are eating those pretty mindlessly and not even realizing that half a dozen are going down. And so you're not going to change the right thing unless you know for sure.
Yes. Yes. That is so, so well said. Yesterday I had that feeling of, I didn't have any leisure time today. I didn't have any time to relax. And then I looked back and I thought, well, you managed to squeeze in two episodes of How I Met Your Mother like that. That
which
happened.
Is pretty much the definition of a leisure time activity. So there we go.
Exactly, exactly. And on the other side, when I did my first time log, I looked back over it and I had this moment of clarity that, wow, I beat myself up for not working enough. But when I actually look at this time log, I see that I'm working a decent amount of hours. I'm working plenty of hours. So I had to kind of examine that story, which brings up my next question of, what are some of the most common epiphanies or moments of clarity that women have when they look over these time logs? What do they realize when they see this data?
Well, one that comes up a lot is people are generally spending more time with their kids than they think they are, which may sound surprising, but there's a certain narrative out there that if you have a demanding job, you are therefore not spending enough time at home. And I don't know what enough means to different people, but the truth of the matter is there often is time with the family just through sheer math. I mean, they're around a lot, and so are you. And there are 168 hours in a week. So if you're working 40 hours a week, sleeping 8 hours a night, there's 72 hours left over, and presumably some of those overlap with the existence of your family. So you're going to see them during those times. And I mean, even if you're working 50 hours, 60 hours, I mean, the numbers are still high. You're working 60 hours a week, that's 52 hours for other things, even if you're sleeping 8 hours a night. So, I mean, it's a lot of time. And so once we know those numbers, it's just about saying, well, where does that time go, as opposed to thinking it doesn't exist? So that's one. You know, a lot of people say sort of silly things like they have no time for exercise, which, you know, you could exercise 2.5 hours per week and be meeting the guidelines. And again, 40 hours for work, 56 for sleep, 72 for other things. I think it's possible to find 2.5 in there somewhere. Yes. I mean, you may not want to find 2.5, and that's fine, but that's a different matter than not having it there at all. You know, people are often amazed to see how much time goes to things that are pretty much just unconscious. The time goes to it because they haven't really thought about where they want the time to go, and that can be high-quality leisure time, but it often just isn't because there's no forethought about it. So one example of that is that people don't figure out what they want to do on the weekend until some point during the day on the weekend. And by that point, a big chunk of the day has gone, and they've usually just been puttering around the house, maybe doing inefficient housework, you know, kids watching TV, which is fine. Again, you could be watching TV too, but you want to spend your leisure time in ways that you've actually thought about. And so sometimes it might be better to have thought earlier in the week, like, oh, well, we wanted to go to that state park this weekend, then come back at 2 or 3 o'clock and you can watch TV for the rest of the day. But if you don't think about it till 3 o'clock, you're probably not going to go to the state park. So it's just better to think of it ahead of time, do it, know when it's going to happen, and then let the time go as it will after that.
Yes, that is such a perfect example, because this is something that I struggle with in my own life. I kind of go full speed during the week, and then I hit the weekend and I think, I would have loved to do something fun today, but I didn't do that advanced planning and I didn't think through how I wanted that leisure time to go.
Yeah.
And then I end up thinking, yeah, I really should mop the bathroom floor. Mm-hmm. But then you're like, is this how I want to spend my Saturday? No.
Yeah, it probably is not. And the thing is, I mean, the mopping the floor came because you wanted to do nothing. And it's impossible to do nothing. Like, you'll do something, but whatever the something is, it's probably not going to be as relaxing as if you actually think about it. So, you know, I'm not saying plan every minute of your weekends. Like, people say, oh, I don't want to plan all my leisure time. Well, don't plan all your leisure time. I'm not talking about every 15 minutes, like at work, or, you know, sending calendar invites for dinner or something like that. It's just that you want to put a little bit of thought into what would make this feel like my leisure time has been spent in a way that adds to my energy levels, that makes me feel good about life, that makes me feel like I have a life. Mm-hmm. I mean, those are some smart questions to ask.
I love that. Yes. And I think that's part of why I love your books and your blog so much, is this idea of coming at time from this empowered place of, I have time, I get to choose how to spend it, I have agency here. And so that's something I just wanted to, you know, ask in general. When people really take that stance, where do you see them begin to invest more time? And where are some of the areas where they start to invest less time? So it could be, you know, housework. Obviously, the mopping the bathroom floor is a really obvious example of that's not something I would choose to prioritize. But I did it kind of from that unconscious place. So when people come from a more conscious place, where are some of the areas that they change their time allotment?
Well, one thing they do is making higher quality leisure time. So again, a lot of the me time that we have is very unconscious. And so we do things that are very easy, such as surfing the web, spending time on social media, TV watching. And those are fine in their places, but when people think about what they want to be doing with their time and take agency for it, they start rediscovering some other leisure time activities that might be a lot more fun, like sending a text to a friend and saying, let's get together this week, and making a plan to have it happen, and then doing that. And you'll enjoy that so much more than looking at posts from semi-friends on Facebook or something. And spending time with a real friend is a much better way to spend your time. Feels a lot better. Choosing to read during before bed, for instance, instead of just turning on the TV because it's easy, because I've thought through, oh, this is a book I want to read. Let me make sure I have it. Now I have it. Now I can read it. Use my time that way. Hobbies as well. A lot of people, parents in particular, do have some quantity of leisure time after young children go to bed. Mm-hmm. You have a choice of what you can do at that time. You know, some of it's probably spent getting ready for the next day, but often people just sort of pass out on the couch, turn the TV on, or else they're on their phones or whatever. And you can do that, or you could consciously say, I'm going to go do my knitting or my scrapbooking or whatever other hobby it is that I like, and I keep telling myself I don't have time for it. Well, I can see 45 minutes right now, I could do it. Mm-hmm. It's just you have to think about it in order to make that happen.
Yes, yes. And I like how you highlighted with that example about you could send a text to a friend and reach out and make an in-person connection. Something I've written about is this vulnerability that kind of comes with admitting that you're not too busy. Like, when you change that story, when you say, actually, you know what, I have time for the things that are important to me, and I have time for the people that are important to me, there can be this kind of fear and vulnerability of, well, what if I reach out and I don't get a response, and I don't, you know, that someone else doesn't sort of reach back. So I guess what would you encourage people if they're kind of afraid of making more space? What would you say to them?
Well, I mean, in terms of reaching out to other human beings, I mean, yes, life is a risk of rejection. I mean, that's, you know, everything, friendship, romance, getting a job. I don't know, but it's just in general, having human connection is worth it. So put it out there. I think it's also just a volume game. You want to make friends, like ask a bunch of people to get together. Not all of them will respond, but so what? Some of them will, and now you know, like, who's worth the time and who's not. I would say, in terms of the fear of not being busy enough, this is the thing with busy is it's often about feeling like no one's ever going to sit there and say, you know, I am just so important. I want you to know just how important I am. Like, I'm not going to say that, right? Instead, I'm going to be just talking about how busy I am, because it implies the same thing. It implies that everyone needs something from me. People need stuff from me at work. People need stuff from me in my home and in my community. And because of that, I am just so busy, and it's because I am so important. Right. But, I mean, honestly, anyone can pack a schedule. I think it takes some real discipline and a sense of one's value to say that, no, my time is very valuable to me, and I am going to spend it on the highest value activities that I've determined are important for me and the people I care about. And sometimes that is open space. Sometimes nothing is better than something. You don't have to fill every minute. So I just encourage people to think about where they truly want their time to go, and whether, you know, they like the idea of being busy because it's stuff they really want to do, or if it's just that it seems like the easiest thing to do.
I love that. I love that. Yeah, that was such a helpful way to think about it for me, that, yeah, it is this sense of, I want to be seen a certain way, but then when you go beyond that, there's so much more that's rewarding. So, yeah, I really like that. Thank you. I also wanted to say thank you, because one of the tweaks that you've mentioned in your post about, you know, 10 small things that will change your life, putting your phone into airplane mode has just been, I'm a writer, and so this is like a lifesaver for me, of just knowing I'm not going to have an interruption right now. And you talked about also the fact that there's a significant gap in phone checks per hour between people who feel relaxed about time and people who feel anxious about their time. So could you talk a little bit about the anxiety that arises when we think that we're always on call?
Yeah, well, it's just that. It's being on call, that anything could interrupt you, so you never get totally into something because you might get interrupted. And so as much as you can, minimizing that, I mean, some things in life are going to interrupt you anyway, but if you, some of it's self-inflicted, and so you want to take away parts of it that are self-inflicted. And so putting your phone on airplane mode means that it's still available to you. It's not like you're leaving it at home when you're going somewhere else. And it's, you can even still see the time. Like, that's, I mean, honestly, most of the time I'm looking at my phone, I'm using it as a clock. I want to see what time it is. But then once you've looked at it, it's very easy to say, oh, well, let me check my email, and then let me check what else is on here. And you cycle through this list of various apps you might have, checking various things. And so putting in airplane mode forces you to do one other step before you do that, after looking at time and before you're into your Instagram vendor or whatever it is. So that one extra step is often enough to stop you right in your tracks. And so that's what is the upside of airplane mode. Plus, you know, you burn your battery a lot slower in airplane mode, so you may as well take advantage of that as well.
That is another great point. I love that. It's just that one-step barrier. And I think it was, actually, this is sort of on the flip side. I remember reading a blog post by Ramit Sethi, which he talked about the idea of taking down barriers to behaviors that you want to perpetuate. So when you open your fridge, it's really helpful, obviously, if you have the healthy, easy to reach for food that's right there. And I know you've written about that too, like, buy the pre-cut vegetables, just do it, so you'll have them on hand. But for behaviors that you want to discourage, put an extra step in there.
Yeah, we're ultimately pretty lazy. So if you want to do something, make it easy. If you don't want to do something, make it hard. And that will pretty much solve most of the problem.
Yes. Yes, that's such a great quotable. I'm gonna definitely write that one down.
Pin that one.
Yes, yes, exactly. So this is just another good opener to talk as we wrap up. I want to hear about your next book, Off the Clock. So could you tell us a bit what that's about and what you've discovered in writing it?
Yeah, so I'm very interested about why some people feel like they have more time than others. I mean, clearly we all have the exact same amount of time, so why do some people feel more relaxed about their time than others? And, you know, there's obviously some things in life. I mean, people who are retired feel less anxious about their time than people who are working, and people who have young kids at home feel like they have less time than people who do not. And that's just, you know, stages of life. But even within those categories, some people feel like they have more time than others. So I'm looking at people with full busy lives. Why do some people feel more relaxed about time, and what are they doing differently? Mm-hmm. And I've found a number of sort of behaviors that people do that can change how they perceive time. And so that's what Off the Clock is looking at.
Oh, wow. I can't wait to read that, because just that whole idea of, obviously there is linear time, there is clock time, but then there's our perception of time, which, you know, that can change everything if you change your perception of time.
Yeah. And interestingly, I mean, so things we don't want to do seem to pass very slowly. Things we do want to do pass very quickly. And so this question is always, well, are there mental tricks you can do? Are there things you can be, you know, do in your life that can make the good times pass as slowly as the bad times? I mean, that's the goal, right? Yeah. And so if we can pull that off, we're great.
Exactly. Exactly. We can stay in those moments for a little longer. And yeah, I love having that problem of, if I start to write, I'll have to set an alarm for myself of like when it's time to transition to the next thing. Because as you say, time just moves differently. When you're engrossed in something, you have to be reminded, oh wait, you have to come out of it. It's time to snap out of the trance.
And what's really fun is when you can set up a day where you don't have to come out of the trance. I mean, the good news is eventually you will, because you'll be hungry. I mean, we inhabit our temporal bodies, so there's nothing we can do about that fact. Eventually, you're going to have to stop because you'll have to eat or go to the bathroom. So It's all good in that sense. So if you can at least block out a couple of hours, like, you don't even need to set the alarm, because eventually you'll have to look at the clock for those sheer biological reasons.
That is such a good point. Yes, and that's like, for me, that's my Sunday of just Saturday is family time, downtime, and then Sunday is, okay, work on your creative project as long as you want to. And that is such a treat of just, yeah, like you said, just going with the flow. So I know I want to honor your time, obviously, but any final words of wisdom, any stories to share, anything to wrap up?
Just that, you know, I really hope your viewers will try keeping track of their time for a little bit. A few days, a week would be ideal, because I really do think you can learn something from it. And really, it's just about this mindfulness. When we know where the time goes, then we do take more ownership of it, and we decide what we want to do with it. And if we should celebrate the things that are working, and we can change the things that aren't.
Awesome. That's a perfect way to end. Oh, thank you so much, Laura. This has been just delightful to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me.